Name the meeting and date and time.
Just a minute.
I don't need mine, so you can have them.
What is this?
Work meeting.
Work meeting for our 6th Regional Council.
I'm gonna submit receipt to get reimbursed for those cookies, all right?
Each.
Okay, we're gonna start the meeting for the training for the R6 Regional Council for Fountain Green City. You're up, Shay.
All right.
Good thing I came early.
Keep it pretty informal. The first section of this training is just your OFMA training, so it's a training that you have to have each year. And then the second part is kind of a newly elected section that's not necessarily required by the state, but it covers some topics that we like to cover with communities, both newly elected and just ongoing. So this is my fourth time giving it so far this year, so we're not too far down the line, but we're getting there. We are going to have to squeeze a little bit for time. 30 minutes is quick on it, but I'll try to run through it. So, you have the slides that I'll run through in front of you. Feel free to ask questions throughout. So, disclaimer, I'm not an attorney. My opinion is not a legal opinion. Just have to mention that. So, essentially, we'll run through what OFMA is, who is subject to OFMA, and then we'll cover noticing, minutes, agendas, all that type of stuff, closed meetings, electronic meetings, GRAMMA, and training requirements. So, what is OFMA? OFMA is the Open and Public Meetings Act. The Open and Public Meetings Act is just a section of state code. Do you want me to stand up here?
Yeah, that's better.
OFMA is just the section of state code that outlines essentially the rules that a public body has to follow, right? So for Fountain Green, a public body is your legislative body, so your city council, your planning commission, and then sometimes there's a gray area with like your library board or a DRC, like a development review committee, those other boards. When in doubt, it's just safest to follow OFMA for those. So like Nephi has a DRC, depending on who's on the DRC and what they do, it kind of varies, but some follow OFMA and some don't.
So the planning commission should do this training every year.
Yeah, planning commission has to have OFMA training every year, just like the city council, which I'm happy to go to one of their meetings and do that separately. Okay, so a public body, we covered that. Jumping into your general timeline, so you have your meeting notice, your meeting recordings, your pending minutes, and then your approved minutes. So those are your five key pieces of a normal meeting. We're on slide 7. We'll break each of those down individually. So slide 8 is covering meeting notice, so what has to be included in your meeting notices, the date, time, and location of the meeting, as well as the agenda. The agenda essentially needs to have anything that you're going to take action on. Even discussion items is preferable, right? But you can't take action on anything unless it's on an agenda. If it's not on an agenda, you have to put it on the next meeting's agenda to take action. No voting.
That is without fail, right?
Without fail. Yeah, correct. You got to post notices for 24 hours. That's just for your standard meeting. That doesn't include public hearings. Public hearings have additional requirements. We'll cover those a little bit later. You also have to post an annual notice of your meeting schedule on the state's public notice website. Your staff's really good and handles most of this pretty effectively. So applaud them there. Let's see. What is a public meeting? So essentially a public meeting is when your public body has a quorum that gathers together and discusses the public's business, right? So you have, how many, are you a six-member council? Let's see, one, two,
five.
Five and a mayor? So technically six, right? So six-member council, mayor doesn't typically have a vote in Fountain Green, correct?
That is correct. Less needed.
Less needed for tie votes or
right.
A couple other exemptions probably that are highlighted in your code. So for a quorum, for you, it would be three council members plus the mayor. The mayor does not count towards the quorum in a six-member quorum of government. Questions come up if the mayor's absent and somebody's mayor pro tem. Does that council member count towards the quorum? Answer, my opinion is no. So you would have to have three additional council members in addition to the mayor pro tem if the mayor was absent from the meeting. Again, if you're at church, if you're at the grocery store, if you're at the park, Lamb Days, and a quorum runs into each other, don't discuss the public's business. Technically, that's a public meeting, and technically it would have to be noticed. I would just recommend avoiding gathering.
The state training specifically said, casual meetings, they gave the example of at church, was acceptable.
As long as you're not discussing the public's business, right? So if you are gathering together and you have a quorum present and you're not discussing the public's business, technically it's not a public meeting and technically you're fine.
It's like still talking.
That's always been, before it was like that too, we had to be kind of careful.
Yeah. Really, the caution is, in small towns, people talk, rumors circulate, and if there's a hot topic and people are kind of fired up about things and then they see a group of city council members gathered together, it just sometimes causes issues in small towns, right? So just recommend to be cautious.
Can't meet at the cemetery bridge project.
Not a quorum.
I'm dead serious.
I know. Yeah, but he's right.
You could notice it, and have a quorum there.
So you just have to let me know. If
24 hours before we go look at the bridge.
If there's going to be three of you, I need to know.
I'll just stay home.
It's way worse for county commissions. It just takes two of them. It's rough.
Yeah.
I mean, even if two of them are talking, it's a quorum. So, recordings. Recordings can be edited. Compact communities edit recordings in the past. Please don't edit your recordings. They do have to have the date, time, and place labeled on them. Recordings have to be made available to the public within 3 days. So again, it doesn't say in state code that they have to be posted. It says they have to be made available. There's a difference there between the recording and the pending minutes. So slide 11 covers pending minutes. So these are your minutes that are written. But not necessarily approved by the council. So in your city council meeting tonight, you'll likely have pending minutes that you're going to approve. Those pending minutes have to be made available, which interpret it how you'd like, within 30 days.
Sorry, and then labor.
Yeah.
So if Kim doesn't make it, the meeting minutes cannot be approved.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so if they can't be approved, you would post the pending minutes on the state's website. Yeah, and then you in your next meeting, you would approve those. And then those would have to be posted within 3 business days after approval.
Okay.
Yep. There have been instances where there's a whole new council and there's no quorum where to approve the previous minutes, and they just have them go back and review the recordings and then approve that, because that's really the only way that they could get around that. So. Emergency meetings. Really the biggest things you need to know on an emergency meeting. To have an emergency meeting, you need to attempt to contact the full council, and you need to have a majority approve the emergency meeting. You can do it with less than 24 hours notice. You still have to notice it just as soon as possible, right? Just as you would typically notice. So even if it's 3 hours until you're holding the meeting, you would still post it 3 hours before the meeting on the notice website. It's kind of subjective. They don't necessarily outline individual types of emergencies, right? So interpret that how you will. Closed meetings. So slide 14 and 15 cover a bunch of information on closed meetings. There are several sections of state code that outline closed meetings. Really, a couple of key points that I want to hit on. You have to have a quorum present. Of the quorum present, it isn't the same vote as a normal vote. So for a normal vote to approve something, you'd have to have 3 of your 5 council members to pass that vote. For a closed meeting, you have to have 2/3 approved to enter a closed session. So 2/3 is 66%, 3 of 5 is just 60%, right? So technically, you'd have to have 4 of your 5. It does say of those present, not of the full council. So technically, if you had someone absent, then you would go off, you would base the 2/3 vote off of those here, not the full council members. That one is something that's commonly broken. other things that I want to touch on with closed meetings. Some don't have to be recorded. The biggest one that's not recorded that I've seen the most commonly is personnel issues, right? The mayor still has to sign an affidavit swearing that that was the only topic that was discussed within the meeting, not necessarily who it was about, but just that that personnel matter that's cited in state code was the item that was discussed in the closed meeting. And then it does say that you may keep written minutes of closed sessions. It does not say you must. But you must make an unedited recording of those sessions that it doesn't provide an exemption for. Right? So.
And what, say that again, unedited recording?
Yeah, so just a full recording, right? No editing your recordings for either open or closed sessions. So. Electronic meetings. If you're going to have electronic meetings, you have to have an electronic meetings ordinance. I think we're good there. I think we did that a year or two ago. So,
what is the ordinance?
The ordinance essentially just has to outline how the proceedings of the meeting go. So some people make it really complex. Some people just align it with their normal meeting proceedings and the state's code, which is kind of what I remember that yours covers.
And is just a vote allowed?
Yeah.
Electronic?
Yeah, you can take a vote. In the electronic meeting with
so
everyone.
If I was gone, attended electronically, I could still vote.
Yeah, I believe your ordinance is written to allow vote.
I'll get you a copy.
You need to verify that.
Yeah, I'll get a copy.
I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I asked how you did it during COVID. Oh, we just held the meetings.
Yeah, we did. I believe I drafted a electronic meetings ordinance, and it was passed by the previous council. But yeah, we can pull it up.
Yeah.
Okay, grandma. Essentially, the biggest point I want to hit home here is just be careful with what you're saying. Open or closed session, courts could still request closed session information. Any texts that you send in between each other, notes that you send in between each other, emails, those are all available to be grant requested, especially if it's within a meeting. So if two council members are texting each other or emailing each other in a meeting, somebody could technically grant request that text or that email. Because you're here as a quorum discussing public business in a public meeting.
What if somebody outside watching Zoom texts? Is that
like a public, like a person
yeah.
from the public?
Yeah.
I mean, I still think that would be subject to grandma because they're texting. It gets a little bit
especially
easy because they're not a member of the legislative body, right? And so where's the line there?
Especially probably during an open meeting, I would think that.
But I just generally wouldn't recommend texting or emailing about public's business during a public meeting. Right.
So I can't write notes for Laura.
You can. They just need to be grant requested.
Oh,
right?
I bet. Okay, so I better make it nice.
Yeah. The last piece of this OTMA section is just training. So the presiding officer of the public body, which is the mayor for the town or the city council, and the chair for the planning commission is the one that's in charge of making sure that you receive OPMA training. Sometimes the state wants a certificate that's provided after the video. They will accept minutes from this meeting as in place of that certificate. So technically this meeting can count as in place of the state's video, right? Questions on OPMA before we jump into some newly elected stuff? We're coming up on the meeting. Okay. You want me to jump into this other stuff real quick?
Yeah, if you need to do it, let's get it over.
Okay. I think some of it's good information. I'll try to be quick with it. Slide 21 covers your budget timeline. Again, your staff do a great job with this. Just key points. Your tentative budget has to be made available by the first meeting in May. Your public hearing where your city, your tentative budget has to be available for at least 10 days before the adoption of your final budget. Your public hearing has to be noticed for 7 days. And then you have to adopt your final budget before June 30th. And then the final budget has to be filed with the state auditor within 30 days of adoption. The adoption timeline does change if you go through the truth and taxation process. The truth and taxation process will likely dramatically change this year with the legislative session. I think there's already two or three bills that are proposed for that. So we're watching those close. We'll move to property tax. Do you want to run through property taxes?
Sure.
Okay. Slide 23, 24, and 25 cover property tax. So this is just a simplified example of how they work for a municipality, right? So in slide 23, we're in year 2024. We have house A, B, and C. You can see their assessed value. You can see the property tax rate. And you can see the amount they're paying in property tax. Over on the right, you can see that the assessed value and the property tax rate is the amount that that house is paying. And the city receives a total of $500, okay? If you move to slide 24, we still just have house A, B, and C, but one thing changed. House B was reassessed from $173,000 to $190,000, which caused a shift in the property tax rate, right? The city didn't do anything. This just naturally occurred through a reassessment of the home value. Right, the property tax rate does shift without the city taking action. So Utah's system is revenue driven, not rate driven. Right? Very important distinction. It is revenue driven, not rate driven. So in the example on page 24, we're in 2025, the only change being the reassessment from 173 to 190, all three houses pay a different amount, right? House A went from 150 to 146, house B went from 150 to 159, and house C went from 200 to 195. And so you can see how those fluctuate a little bit. If you move to page 25, we have now four homes. This is the year 2026, so this is the next year. Difference here, house C was reassessed from 231 to 240. And you also added the fourth house, so house D, right? So again, you can see under each house in that bottom right box, you can see the assessed value times the property tax rate gives you the amount that they're paying. Again, every home's amount that they're paying changed. The big difference here that I want to touch on is in the first two boxes, the city received $500 in property tax. Again, city's amount does not change. They receive the same amount of revenue regardless of reassessment. The only thing that would increase the city's is the process of truth and taxation or if you experience growth, right? But there's a key difference to note here. So if you look at that bottom right box on page 25, house D is paying $161, right? And that's the new house that we added. Before this year, the city was receiving $500, right? The city is now receiving $661. The only increase the city received is from the new home. There is no increase from house A, B, or C, right? So while the city is receiving a higher amount, they did not go through truth and taxation, and that house is only paying their way. The city is still not receiving any additional revenue from any of the homes that were already present, right? So if you want to keep up with inflation, there's no inflationary measure built into the truth and taxation process. You have to go through truth and taxation, right? Really misunderstood topic in Utah. Happy to help with the process if you would like. It's going to be different this year. So we're watching the legislative session to see what changes come. We are also having a session at our regional growth summit on truth and taxation, and it will cover the new changes. So we'll send that out. Keep moving. Is that okay? We got a couple slides left.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we got 2 minutes.
Slide number 26 covers the 5 common taxes that small municipalities within our region consider adopting. Let's see. I have a sheet that covers which ones of these you have. Pull it up real quick. So Fountain Green has the municipal energy tax. So you have that first one, and you do not have the other 4, as I have it marked. Is that correct in your mind?
I thought we had the highway tax.
Did we pass the highway? I can check the tax commission's record. They would have it. I just have a spreadsheet that I went through the tax commission and checked, but we can check.
Yeah, would you check?
But, just running through those quickly. So you do have the first one. That's a tax on basically Rocky Mountain Power, Enbridge Gas. That's what that's typically on, up to 6%. The revenue from that can be used for general fund purposes, so that's really big, right? The highway tax is the sales and use tax, about 2.3%. The revenues from that can only be used on transportation stuff, so like roads and sidewalks. The RAP tax is the only one of the 5 that requires a vote on a ballot. So it's the most difficult to get through. But it's for parks, right? So the revenues from that are going to help with...
What is the RAP?
Recreation, arts, and parks.
Somebody did... Was it Gunnison or something? Somebody just did that.
Last year.
Yeah.
There's several, yeah, throughout our bigger cities
to have it.
Let's see... So Aurora has it, they're one of the communities I work with, Mona has it, Nephi has it, Richfield has it.
Maybe it was Richfield.
So about half the communities I work with have
it. They usually base them on retail sales or some kind of food and things like that.
Yeah. It is a sales and use tax, so it's based off those same transactions, yeah. Telecommunications is the same, functions generally the same as the energy tax. It just is on, like, Centricom or Xfinity.
And don't we get Centricom a tax from Centricom? Yeah.
So there is a difference with that. You may get money from them for use of right-of-ways or that type of thing, and there's a franchise fee, and that is different from the actual tax.
Okay.
So, but we can double-check and see.
I think it is a franchise.
Yeah.
It says it's for cable TV.
Okay. CATV. Yeah. We can check what the tax commission has listed. I mean, they're the ones that collect it. So, the last one, transient room tax, or TRT, is what it's commonly referred to, is a sales and use tax up to 1%. You can use it for general fund purposes. This is probably the only tax of the 5 that's not going to necessarily affect residents as much. So it's a tax on short-term rental stays. So if someone has an Airbnb or a VRBO and someone's staying in that for under 30 days, then they are going to pay the tax, which would be collected by the tax commission and then sent to the city. So if you're interested in any of those, happy to write the word.
We have one, but I don't know.
Utility rate adjustments.
Tell us about it.
Utility adjustments on page 27. Essentially, we've got like 2 minutes left, so I'll just key point here. Your funds there, regardless of whether you have water, sewer, etc., should be self-sustaining, right? when I say self-sustaining, they should be paying for all current expenses and collecting a fund for upcoming capital improvement projects. If they're not doing that, then we should have a study done that shows recommended rates. There are several bodies, so Rural Water and RCAC do rate studies for free. So if you're interested in those, we can do those. Second to last page 29, there's kind of a cheat sheet there on the number of days required for public hearing notices for those different topics. Just as a reminder, the notice generally does not include the day of the hearing and the day of the notice. So it's 10 days in between those 2 days. That's it. Unless you have questions for me.
We made it.
Out there. We made it.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's throw it right in.
Any questions?
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.